I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division to order. A quorum is present. Representative Purcell, have you reviewed the minutes?
I have, and I've moved to approve the minutes.
Representative Purcell moves the minutes from March 20th. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. Congratulations. What happened? Representative Carlson, did I miss something? House File 2076, the Closed Landfill Investment Fund. I will move that House File 2076 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Carlson, would you please present your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this deals with the Cliff Funds, the Closed Landfill account, and it was drawn to my attention, I think, after the chair of this committee asked some questions about it earlier in the session, and the question was whether language was needed to clearly say whether the money had been appropriated or not. So I introduced a bill and actually worked on this with my counterpart in the Senate to clarify that we needed language that said appropriated. The bill as it was originally introduced, and I have an amendment that I would like to have put on, would have clarified that the money needed to be appropriated and then would have had legislative involvement. So the amendment would make it a statutory appropriation, and if the amendment goes on, Mr. Chairman, then the MMB would be satisfied with this language that it's appropriated, and of course it ultimately goes to the Pollution Control Agency is when they reference commissioner, that's the commissioner we're referencing. So, Mr. Chairman, if somebody on the committee would move the amendment.
Representative Wagenius will move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Amendment is adopted. Representative Carlson, to your bill as amended, do you have
And Mr. Chairman, the problem that MMB had with the original language that I had was that if there were a situation that came up in the interim, they wouldn't have the flexibility that they perhaps needed. So the amendment made it a statutory appropriation. I think if you fold this in, something that and I was trying to clarify the appropriation part of it, your committee probably should have some discussion, in my view, about what kind of oversight you perhaps want to have. I was just trying to clarify that we lacked the word appropriated or appropriation, and that was what we were initially working on. This is not an insignificant fund. I don't know to what degree the committee may have talked about it, but just recently I checked with our chief fiscal analyst, and currently there's $65 million in the fund, and with the current market value of the fund, which is a different number, it's $91 million. So it is important, in my view, that be clarified that the money is appropriated, and then that would be up to you, Mr. Chairman, and your committee as to what kind of oversight you want to have moving forward. That's it from my perspective.
Mr. Kadelka? Any questions for the author while Mr. Kadelka is?
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Adalka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And I'll keep this very brief. I want to thank the author for the conversations we've had and the clarification of the language here so that it's consistent with other cleanup funds and allows for us to work on these types of sites like we do our others. So we appreciate the amendment.
Any questions? Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill? Anyone in the audience? Representative Carlson, any closing remarks?
Just, Mr. Chairman, that you and I had talked earlier, and I think it's best if it just be folded in as the motion reflects. And from my perspective, we lack the word appropriate or appropriation, and that part of it's clarified. And then as you move forward, you can determine what kind of oversight you'd like as a committee.
Representative Fabian.
Yeah, sorry, Mr. Chair, I was late there on that. But so as the chair of the Ways and Means Committee and MPCA conversations, at some point, how much is going to be needed from the closed landfill fund on a yearly or a biennial basis moving forward?
Oh, that may be a good question of PCA. If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Mr. Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, right now each year the agency does an obligation, a 30-year obligation, and what we're projecting right now, it's $277 million plus will be needed over the next 30 years for just the construction-type projects, operation and maintenance-type, not including staffing for the agency for those efforts.
Representative Fabian.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kadalka, Assistant Commissioner, what happens with the need each year? Is there a lot of variability in that, or is it fairly stable? Mm-hmm. If you were to show a graph, what would that look like?
Commissioner Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, that's a good question. It does change over time. For instance, a good example is with WDE that the legislature helped us with this legislative session. There are big projects like that, or in the future as we look at freeway landfill or others that may need caps replaced in that, there are larger pieces. The closed landfill fund is funded by three portions. Part is from the remediation fund. After fiscal year 2020, we will be looking to also use a portion of the closed landfill investment fund, only the historical interest amounts, so that the fund is there long term, since the need for these landfills are in a perpetuity. And then the other is bonding. And so historically we've come on some of those much larger projects, kind of even out those cost needs that you talked about through bonding on bigger ticket items.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, just real quick on the WDE, where are we at with regards to that? I know we passed that the bill off the House floor and the Senate and whatnot. And as I understand, we were pretty close to missing the mark there. Can you help us out?
Mr. Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we made the deadline just on time. We already started the paperwork in anticipation that the legislature would move forward. We got it to them by their deadline, the contract, for a lot of work through MMB and Department of Administration and MPCA. And so we're moving forward to finalize that contract and the work schedule moving forward. So we're still on. The state has done everything to stay on the timeline to continue to do the work late summer, early fall this year yet. So thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Deputy Kadalka. I'm thinking about your need to project so far forward and wondering how you're now factoring in the weather events that we will be expecting from climate change.
Commissioner Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, that's a very good question. Climate change will have an impact on this. For instance, some of the wear and tear of our landfills are covers from flooding events, rain events. And so what we do it is through a percentage possibility, and I would have to get back to specifically how we have climate factored into that, although we do recognize the climate's impact on what we need to do in the future.
Any other questions? Any closing remarks? I think we got it.
Chairman, I gave them earlier. Yep. The origin for this came about, as I mentioned, what I viewed initially as kind of a housekeeping bit of language turned out to be more than that, and that's why we negotiated the language that's before you with mainly with MMB. Commissioner Franz was the one that I actually got the compromise language from. And just historically, I guess, in the law, it lacked the word appropriation or appropriated. And so that was what we were trying to correct. So thank you.
I will renew my motion that House File 2076, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The bill is laid over.
Thank you.
Representative Lippert. House File 1413. Members, this bill was heard on March 14th and was laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. It is my understanding that the Energy and Climate and Policy Finance Division would like to have the bill before the committee. I will move that House File 1413 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee with a recommended re-referral to the Energy and Climate Finance and Policy Division. Is there any discussion on this motion? Representative Fabian.
Just a point of clarification. When did you say we heard this?
Representative Fabian, March 14th.
Thank you.
Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say it. Oh, Representative Backer.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. Do we have any update on the fiscal note on this at all? Any? Because
the fiscal note's still in process, I believe, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
Motion prevails. It's on its way to Representative Wiggenius's committee. Thank you. Representative Lee.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1584 before the committee.
Be recommended to be referred to Ways and Means?
Yes.
Representative Lee, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee member. This is a bill from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to change the eligibility requirements of their Small Business Environmental Improvement Loan Program. This bill will expand the availability to businesses with less than 100 employees, eliminates the $1 million cap on a business net worth, lower the interest rate on loans, and raise the allowable loan amount from $50,000 to $75,000. And these changes were passed last year but were not signed into law, and so that's why we're here today, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lee, do you have a testifier?
The PCA is here, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Katie Smith. I'm an assistant division director at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in House File 1584, and thank you to Representative Lee for carrying this bill. Mr. Chair, this bill is one of MPCA's policy bills for 2019. This bill was non-controversial last year, but was caught up in the veto of the omnibus bill, so it was not enacted. The bill has three small policy provisions that affect our Small Business Environmental Loans Program. This program was created in 1997 to help small businesses purchase the equipment they need to meet environmental regulations. It's a good program, but the terms of these loans have changed and not have been updated since 1997. And House File 1584 does just that. Specifically, to the three provisions in the bill, first on lines 1.13 to 1.15, the bill updates eligibility conditions for these loans, changing the limit from 50 employees to 100 employees. It deletes a requirement that the borrower have a net worth of less than $1 million, but keeps a requirement that the business have an after-tax profit of less than $500,000. Second, the bill changes the interest rate on lines 1.18 and 1.19. Currently, the interest rate for these loans is 4% or half the prime rate, whichever is greater. So as currently written, it can't go below 4%. The current prime rate is 5.25%. In the early 1990s, the prime rate hovered around 10%. And in March 1997, when this program was being created, it was 8.5%. So at that time, 4% was a very competitive interest rate, but times have changed. The new language sets the interest rate as at or below one-half the prime rate, not to exceed 5%. So if enacted today, the bill would lower our interest rate by almost half. This gives us the flexibility to offer businesses a good financing option in all economic conditions. Finally, the loan cap on line 2.1 is increased from $50,000 to $75,000. This is a better fit for current project costs. The intent of this program is to encourage small businesses to take on innovative projects by offering loans with better interest rates than those available on the broader market. We believe that these changes will allow a wider range of businesses to compete for these loans. Thank you for your willingness to consider this legislation, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Any questions for the testifier? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a real familiar bill to me. I'm just curious, and if memory serves me correctly, which often it doesn't, but on the second page of the bill, line 2.1, and the change there from 50 to 75, I think the change that was made last year was from 50 to 100,000. If that's correct, why did we not go to the 100,000 again this year?
Ms. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I don't recall. Perhaps one of my colleagues does. It's my understanding this is the same changes we proposed last year.
We'll check. Thank you. There's lots of time left in this session.
Any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Anyone in the audience? Representative Lee, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to hear House File 1584.
Representative Lee renews his motion that House File 1584 be recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. Ayes have it.
Thank you.
Members, I'd like to introduce the 8th, 9th, and 10th grade students from Hope Co-op in Cokato as they're walking in. They are participating in the Capitol Historic Sites Voice of the People, Your Role in Minnesota Government Tour and Education Program. So welcome. Vice Chair Claflin, are you ready to take the gavel?
Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 17. I would move 1709 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1709, earlier in the session, we heard about prior transfers that occurred in the early 2000s from the Metropolitan Landfill Contingency Action Trust account. And what this bill does is it restores that money to the account, very simply. And I do have a testifier.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that includes within its membership the four suburban counties of Scott, Carver, Washington, and Dakota County. Madam Chair, I just want to indicate to the members of the committee that our organization supports this bill. Haulers in the metropolitan area and their customers have been paying a $6.60 per ton fee for over 30 years that goes into this fund to pay for post-closure costs relating to landfills in the metropolitan area. Some of the landfills that will ultimately be receiving assistance from this fund are among the largest in the state, including Pine Bend and Burnsville. Currently, the funds from this fund are being used to clean up the Pig's Eye landfill, less roughly 2-3 miles from here right now. We heartily support the restoration of the funds that were transferred out of it several years ago. That I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to, if possible, get an explanation of why RDA isn't being tapped to repay these dollars.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Heitzman, could you just repeat that?
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. Why isn't RDA being tapped to repay the $4 million that was sent there in 2005? Just wanted a clarification. We're going to the general fund for this.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought the general fund was a better source to repay the money. In 2004, $9.905 million was transferred from the account to the general fund, and that was the big amount, and then an additional $4 million was transferred to the RDA in 2005. So I thought that the general fund, I did not consider any interest or anything in it. I'm going back those years, and I thought the general fund should be the appropriate use.
Representative Heinzman.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Representative Hansen. I'm watching, of course, is there's lots and lots of bills with general fund implication, and there's some concern that when it comes time to decide what's in and what's out, if it's a high priority, we may be looking for sources for revenues, and general fund dollars might not be there. So putting that out there, I guess, is a conversation point.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Heinzman, I agree. I think as we move forward, look at flexibility here. It's been a long time since these funds were taken out, and I think the right thing to do is to pay them back, and hopefully we can do that.
Other questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doug Carnival, the Ranch J. Carnival Law Firm, representing the National Waste and Recycling Association. We, too, would like to express our support for the bill. This money was collected for a specific purpose. The haulers in this industry collect that fund to provide the money in this fund to take care of the issues that it was supposed to be afforded to. And over the years, some of it has been transferred out. This is simply a restoration of the fund as it was intended in the first place. So we thank Chair Hansen for carrying the bill and would like to support it.
Any other? Yes, Representative Thacker.
And maybe that's this, Madam Chair and Chair. Maybe this was said. How much is in the fund right now? What's the balance?
Chair Hansen.
Mr.
Hagemeyer.
Madam Chair, Representative, the current fund balance, it has $3 or $4 million in the fund. It gets about $800,000, $900,000 in revenue per year.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You know, other questions or testifiers? Chair Hansen, would you like to make any closing remarks?
Appreciate your support. I would renew my motion to lay over House File 1709 for possible inclusion.
The bill is laid over. And Chair Hansen, would you like to move House File 2067?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 2067 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Finance Bill.
Chair Hansen, please present your bill.
House File 2067 relates to dry cleaner fund, and I have a couple testifiers that if you would look in your packet, you will see this transfers some money from the general fund to be credited to the dry cleaner environmental response and reimbursement account. The dry cleaning has number of businesses in Minnesota where dry cleaners has changed over the years, and a lot of small business here that has a cleanup cost, and things have changed over the years that this fund has been in the account. So I'd like the dry cleaners to tell you a little bit about what they do and what's happening with this.
Good afternoon. My name is Keith Downey, and I'm the owner of Minnesota. I'm the owner of East Metro Clean and Press, and I volunteer my time as the president of the Minnesota Cleaners Association. And if I could, I would like to have a quick handout to anybody who wants one to tell you a little bit about where we're going as far as the industry is concerned.
Thank you. We have a page who can help with that. If you'd like to continue with your testimony as we get this passed out.
All right, thank you. If we look at the top table on the handout, we can see back in 2011 there were approximately 135 dry cleaning plants in the entire state of Minnesota. And back in when this fund was put into place approximately 23 to 25 years ago, there were over 350 of us. And since 2011, we've gone down to 108 in the state as of last year, 2018. So we can see our industry has had a declining trend since the 90s. And the biggest factors that are driving this is there's a lot of casual wear, there's a lot of work from home type of scenarios that are limiting piece counts that are putting a lot of pressure on the industry. As well, on the second part of the handout, there's another table that shows the amount of solvent that is being currently sold to the dry cleaning industry by our allied trades, which are local representatives that sell us our solvents. Back in 2011, there was 13,789 gallons of the three different types of solvents that are commonly used sold. And as of 2018, there are 3,274 gallons. Every gallon that's sold to the dry cleaners has a tax or a fee associated with it that goes into the dry clean fund. So when we see that the dry cleaners themselves that also pay a registration fee to the state has declined so immensely, especially over the last 8 to 10 years here, as well as the amount of solvent that we're using, our fund is starting to become short. And then what happens is, since there's so few of us left and the amount of solvent that we're using is decreasing, our proportionate share has been increasing quite a bit. So when we look at the last table, for the 2015 and 2016, our fees were fairly flat, but now just the last 3 years we've exhibited 137% increase on those fees over the last 3 years. It's difficult for us to absorb this, and as we keep looking at the trend over time, it's only going to get worse if we lose any more dry cleaners in the state. Take any questions, I guess.
See no questions. I believe there's another testifier. Welcome, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Dart Poach. I own Don's Leather Cleaning in Minneapolis on East Lake Street. Second generation. When it was back in 1994, 95, that we came to the legislature, I see if Representative Wagenius was there back then, and trying to see if there was anybody else. Representative Hausman was back there. And anyway, I did some testifying back then, and we came together because we didn't want to lose our livelihoods for something that we didn't do illegal. Waste disposal practices started to change in 1980, and the cleaners went right with it. So over the last, well, since 1980, we've disposed of our waste properly, more efficient equipment, reduced the PERT solvent, that is the main issue of today, as of about 8 years ago with the MPCA. Down to virtually nothing. So we've done all the right things, but the vapor intrusion cost associated with investigating ourselves is truly a hardship. The registration fees are a hardship, but what's really hurting us is the reimbursement period is now 3 years. MPCA tells us when we meet with them that about $1.2 million dollars a year of requests from the fund are coming in, and our registration fees only bring in $650. So every year it extends out. It's now 3 years, next year will be 4 years. And for a small cleaner to come up with the $50,000 or $500,000, whatever the investigation, and if there needs to be a response action, who is going to borrow the money for that and wait 3-4 years for it? And that is going to put many, many cleaners out of business. So this appropriation that we're asking for clears off that 3-year waiting period, but also asks for some appropriations for annually to go into the dry cleaning fund, and this will this will keep cleaning up sites, keep business, the remaining dry cleaners in business, and clean up the environment.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee members? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Welcome back.
Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Adalka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And I want to first off thank the author for the bill. We share the concerns over the inability of the dry cleaner environmental response and reimbursement account, the dry cleaner account, to cover the number of cleanups that are needed because of dry cleaners or the dry cleaning chemicals. However, we have concerns about the approach that's taken in this piece. So I think I'd like to just start real quick to provide a little bit of context and history on the account itself. So back in the mid-90s when this was created, it was moving from a individual paying their cost for cleanup and their liability as a result of any contamination that was caused by them. That's how Superfund and our other cleanup programs operate. The one that creates the contamination is on the hook for doing the cleanup. When the dry cleaner account was created, we moved to a sharing of the cost. And so what happened is the dry cleaners pooled together their resources, created a fund, then that would pay out in reimbursements. So costs were shared and pooled together. This has been done in other states and also in Minnesota if you think of the petroleum fund. The amount was set as the account would collect $1 million a year, and it was set out to help see what the need at the time was, and the fees would cover what was needed. As mentioned by the previous testifiers, a lot has changed since then, including what we know about dry cleaning chemicals and their impacts. And as a result, the need has grown much faster than what is there in terms of revenue. And so it creates this situation. One of the problems that was talked about is the delay in reimbursements for those dry cleaners that are doing the work, are compliant with what they're responsible for, and then do the cleanup. However, that's only one of the problems. We have another problem, too, where there are dry cleaners who will not do the work at all, and it falls upon the state to do that work. And at this point, that is becoming more and more prevalent. And so what we're seeing now is we have one set of dry cleaners that are doing the work and getting reimbursements delayed, or others that just decide not to do the cleanup. The state has to take it on, which means additional costs to the actual cleanup because of the administrative process we have to go through. And the state isn't able to go into the account to cover those costs. So that takes away from other projects that the state has to clean up that are non-dry clean related. So there are a number of problems here, and the approach solves potentially one of the problems, but not all the problems. The second concern is this does create some large precedent. It moves away from the overarching principle that the polluter pays and result in general taxpayers paying for the cleanup. And so some of the questions that we want to just bring up to the committee, would we be okay with other small businesses having the same situation? So a plater or a small manufacturing company, the sales tax that they collected be used to cover their liability, or a Fortune 500 company? These are some of the integral pieces of this dilemma that we're in. We think that through more time we can come up with a more all-encompassing approach to solve the issue. We just believe that there are a number of concerns with this particular solution. Now, the agency and the Minnesota Cleaners Association have worked in the past on some things together, and a good example is a couple years ago, we worked to remove third-party developers that did not pay into the fund but were accessing it to clean up property that they were then developing. We've removed them from the expenditure side, which I think is a good change that we both supported, along with enacting rules on what are the reasonable costs for those type of work. But we think there's more that needs to be done. Chair and committee members, thank you for your time. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Representative Wiginius, you had a question.
Thank you. When we were doing the landfill cleanup bill, there was a provision in the bill that nobody said would work, that the PCA needed to go after the underlying insurance. And it turned out it worked, and it worked remarkably well. Have you looked at the underlying insurance policies for all these cleaners statewide?
Mr. Kudelka?
Chair and committee members, that's a very good idea, and it's one that we have on our list. We put together a list of 10 to 20 some good, not so good ideas to have further conversations on. That's one we'd like to continue to explore. We suspect the insurance documents have similar language that the landfills did. It wasn't until after the closed landfill program and that many insurance companies no longer covered environmental cleanups. That's something we're going to need some more time to explore, and I think it is worthwhile exploring.
Representative Bouguinias.
Well, while in the landfill cleanup program, while those clauses went into insurance policies, they did so fairly late in the game. Mm-hmm. And so there were insurance policies that covered landfills, and I think it was over $100 million that we collected. That's real money. And I can't, it seems to me concentrating on those insurance policies is like, it should be at the top of your list of things to do.
Mr. Kudelka?
The chair and committee members, we agree it is one of the items, although there is some, that will take a number of years, that will not fix the immediate problem, but it is part of the overall solution, we believe.
Representative Bouguinias.
I don't recall that it took all that long to do the insurance for closed landfills. What it did take was some legislation. And so we had very, and I believe I see in the audience here, Steve Morris, who was a senator at the time, and it was a Senate provision that we adopted. So the closed landfill was a mix of the House and Senate, but it was a Senate provision on insurance, and it worked. So we have a model mm-hmm. that is there.
Mr. Kudelka?
Madam Chair and committee members, we agree and it's something we'll look into.
Are there other questions? Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this is another example of pollution is expensive. You know, and so some of the efforts that we make to prevent things and reduce exposure to chemicals like this are really important. So as I was preparing today, I was looking up PERC, and it sounds like that's a chemical that's been used for almost a century now and is a known carcinogen. And I'm wondering if, you know, and I was looking at these charts of the amounts of different chemicals, and I'm wondering the manufacturers of the chemicals, so not the small business with the same person I talk to every time I drop off my stuff, but the chemical manufacturers, are they paying into this fund? And if so, how much?
Assistant Commissioner Kudelka.
Madam Chair and committee members, right now the fund is set at, by the legislature, at $650,000 per year to be adjusted in two categories, one being the registration fees, which anticipated for fiscal year 2019 is about $576,000 of that, so the ballpark of it. The other are fees that are paid for when the dry cleaner buys the chemical from the distributor, and those are much smaller. And as mentioned, the dry clean industry has moved away from PERC. It is a much smaller amount. As we look at it, it's potentially one-fifth of what dry cleaning chemical is used versus the other varieties. There have been programs since, like Minneapolis, incentive programs, and, for instance, the small business loan program you heard about before to help dry cleaners move to other equipment. So we are looking to phase away from it where possible. But however, to the question of do they directly pay the chemical companies themselves, they do not pay into the fund.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, you know, so what I'm hearing is disproportionately these really small, I mean, less than 10 employees or most of them, businesses are having their fees, you know, 137%. So they're paying to clean, you know, to keep this fund to do the cleanup that benefits everybody, but they, so the chem, but the chemical manufacturers themselves are not paying. So I, you know, we talk about fairness, we talk about small businesses. I find that concerning, and I appreciate the effort to try to look out for these small businesses who are left. You know, 3 years is a long time to wait when you're a small business, and I'm sure, you know, they're not businesses where you're racking in tons of money. So I'm glad we're having this discussion because I think it's important. So thank you, Representative Hansen.
Chair Hansen? Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just an excellent question from Representative Becker-Finn. But it then calls to mind another question I have. We've just dealt with the TCE issue, and when I was checking on the risk limits, it turns out that the health department has never done a health risk limit, which is enforceable. They've just never done one, even though we've known about this carcinogen for 20 years. We only have guidance values. So my question is there a health risk limit that is enforceable, went through the rulemaking process for PERC?
Assistant Commissioner Hidalgo.
Madam Chair and committee members, the Department of Health has groundwater, drinking water advisory guidance numbers, health-based values, whether it is for PERC, a health risk limit, or an HBV. I do not know that specific answer. They also have, along with our agency, have worked on numbers for vapor intrusion, specifically for PERC, and those are out there. When Department of Health has those numbers, we've incorporated that into our policy for our Superfund program, so we use those numbers. So in terms of an example is if a dry cleaner had a PERC spill, and it got into the groundwater and a drinking water well was next to it. If the Department of Health issued a drinking water well advisory on a health-based value or a health risk limit, the agency would then step forward and have that responsible party do the cleanup. If it was also the same for a triggering vapors into a person's home, we use those values to trigger the requirement that the responsible party does work. So we have effective mechanisms for PERC or other chemicals, TCE or that, to, for us to be able to do our remediation efforts in a partnership between the health-based values and health risk limits that Department of Health sets and then the Superfund regulations that the state has already. So it, we believe that we have an effective tool there, and Department of Health has updated their PERC numbers, not only for vapor but for drinking water in their recent history here, much more so than, say, if we relied on the federal government numbers.
Representative Wiginias.
If I could follow up then. So then citizens have to depend on the PCA for enforcement. If there were a health risk limit, assuming that citizens through MIRA could also weigh in, and it would be much more difficult for citizens if there was only a guidance value and not a actual standard in law.
Mr. Hidalgo?
Madam Chair and committee members, I don't have the information on the citizen component that you mentioned there. We would have to get back to you on that. I don't know.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, I really think you're working on an important issue here. I have a number of these, well, two small cleaners in my district, and they've been concerned about this issue for as long as I've served, 5 years. And I'm sure going back a lot further, judging based on some of the testimony today, this has obviously been an ongoing concern for our cleaners. I might have missed it, but just wanted to quickly check where the bill is going. I see there's a number of references to revenue on lines 3.9 through 3.14. I'm assuming it's going to taxes, but like I said, I might have missed where it was headed.
The motion was to lay it over for further consideration.
All
Are there any other questions from the committee members? Anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Representative Hansen, would you like to make any closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as was noted in the testimony, there really are two parts to the bill. One is dealing with this backlog of small businesses getting reimbursed. And I think, just think of if you had paid for a cleanup and submitted your receipts and had to wait 3 years for getting that reimbursement. I think that there's something that we can do there with whatever appropriate fund to make sure that that is taken care of. I think the discussion over who pays in the future and how is valuable to continue that discussion. I would invite members to co-author the bill. I think it is a good opportunity for a bipartisan bill to help out small businesses and help solve problems. So I would renew my motion that it be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
And the bill is laid over.
Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd like to move House File 973 be re-referred to Ways and Means, approved and re-referred to Ways and Means.
Unfortunately, we can't move to approve it. We recommend it be re-referred to Ways and Means.
Okay.
Representative Purcell, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this House File 973 is a bill to reinstate the 8-citizen board. There's a 9-member citizen board, but our 9-member board at Pollution Control Agency is called the Citizen Board. It's chaired by the Pollution Control Agency Commissioner, so there's 9 members, but 8 of them are citizens. And to restore that board. And in my purview, to reinstate open public review process with publicly available information in the EIS and EAW and permits process at the MPCA, and that's what I believe the rationale was for the Citizens Board when it was established with the Pollution Control Agency in 1967, and I think they served well, and that we should have them back involved in our environmental processes in Minnesota.
Representative Purcell, you have some testifiers.
I do have some testifiers, Mr. Chair, and please move forward here. Several
testifiers, in fact. Excuse me. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Gwen Myers. I am a volunteer lobbyist for the League of Women Voters in Minnesota. The League, as a nonpartisan good government organization, is especially concerned that citizens are able to learn what their government is doing and to participate in government decisions at all levels. Transparency and citizen participation are top priorities. That being the case, the MPCA Citizens Board was among the League's favorite governmental bodies before it was unceremoniously eliminated in the early morning hours of May 25th, the last day of the 2015 legislative session. This was done by a conference committee, which put the abolition in the must-pass omnibus agriculture and environmental finance bill. There had been no bill to eliminate the Citizens Board. There were no hearings and no public testimony was taken before this open and transparent governmental board was abolished in the middle of the night. There is apparently some misunderstanding on this last point. In the Government Operations Committee hearing on House File 973, one of the members insisted that there had indeed been a bill calling for the abolition of the Citizens Board. The bill, he said, was debated in the normal way through committee hearings prior to language being included in the conference report. The member was confused. There was a bill in 2015, House File 1394, authored by Representative Dan Fabian, which was, quote, a bill for an act relating to environment, modifying the duties of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Citizens Board. Its Senate companion was Senate File 1683, authored by Senators Scoy, Rosen, Tomasoni, and Saxhog. There's a Star Tribune article from the June 11, 2015, there's a Star Tribune article from June 11, 2015 that should be attached to this testimony in your packet. The article, After Feedlot Feud, a Minnesota Citizens Board May Bite the Dust, end quote, by Josephine Marcotti and Tony Kennedy. This gives the background on the Citizens Board controversy during the 2015 session. They included a section titled, quote, an 11th-hour surprise, end quote. Here they say, quote, Representative Dan Fabian, Republican Roseau, proposed a bill that would have changed the board's powers and composition. But he said he was as surprised as many other legislators when, on the last day of the session, a new bill emerged from the conference committee that would eliminate the board altogether. It was rolled into the much broader agriculture and environment bill that was approved on the last day of the session after acrimonious debate on the floor of both chambers. The MPA Citizens Board, as it existed from 1967 to 2015, exemplified public access and involvement, transparency and citizen participation at its best, democracy at its finest. It is ironic that this board, created to promote transparency, was abolished behind closed doors in the middle of the night. Protecting the environment is among government's most important responsibilities for all of us and for our grandchildren. Excuse me. It is in fact democracy at its finest. Protecting our democracy is the single most important government responsibility. The League of Women Voters Minnesota believes our democracy requires that the public has a right to view readily, to understand clearly, and to take part easily in decisions on important public policy questions. The abolition of the MPCA Citizens Board did not reflect the will of Minnesota citizens, rural or urban. The League of Women Voters urges you to support House File 973 to reestablish the MPCA Citizens Board as an effective way to engage citizen participation in the important goal of protecting our environment. And we also urge you to develop legislative procedures which reflect our democracy, which do not allow this kind of late-night backroom lawmaking. Thank you for your time today. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you. Ms. Slocum?
Let me add real quick while he's coming up, Mr. Chair. There is a fiscal note in the packets. There should be, I believe.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Beth Slocum, and I farm in Goodhue County where my husband and I raise sheep. I'm a member of the Land Stewardship Project, and I'm here to testify in support of House File 973 to reinstate the Citizens Advisory Board to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency as the board was created originally in 1967 with those original responsibilities and authority, and I appreciate your hearing my testimony today. I believe it's critically important to reinstate the Citizens Advisory Board so that the people of Minnesota have a democratic, open, and transparent process to have their voices heard and responded to when a proposal with significant environmental impact is made in their community. Local farmers, business people, and rural residents know their communities best and can provide valuable insight and experience, what I call local wisdom, when a proposal is brought forward. The Citizens Board provides a people-centered environmental review and oversight process and contributes more than paperwork on desks can ascertain. The board can act on what they hear from neighbors who will feel the real impact of a proposal before these neighbors have their air and water contaminated and their health, their quality of life, and their property values diminished. MPCA commissioners and staff have lots of experience, expertise, and knowledge. But the agency, in my experience and in our experience in rural, the areas where I know people, the agency has too often seen the proposer as the client rather than the citizens who will feel the impact of that proposal. The agency seems to have strayed from its stated mission to protect and improve the environment and human health. Huge feedlot operations don't do either of those. In Goodhue County, where I farm, over the last couple years, the MPCA turned away from the concerns of local residents who are facing a farm corporation's industrial hog barn of 4,700 pigs on an acreage with no home, no residence. That means no resident family, no resident farmer. The MPCA's environmental assessment worksheet left out several neighbors' homes and even more nearby wells. When neighbors presented these errors, the agency refused to make changes to the EAW. The agency also did not seriously assess the high risk of sinkholes in the immediate area of the proposed barn. And when local residents prepared a scientific report on air quality monitoring on other hog barns owned by the proposer, a report that indicated hydrogen sulfide emission levels over the maximum allowed, the commissioner responded in a letter that continuous air monitoring would be initiated, but that never happened. An environmental impact statement was clearly needed, but the commissioner refused to order one. This is why the Citizens Advisory Board is so important in making the best decisions for all Minnesotans. Local folks need other Minnesota citizens who will hear their voices and understand the risks in these large industrial-scale farm feedlot operations. Everything looks perfect on paper, but when thousands of pigs and their manure hit the ground, it's a different story. Thank you very much.
Any questions for the testifier? Thank you.
Thanks.
Kara Josephson.
Hi, good afternoon, Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 973. My name is Cara Josephson, and I represent the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. MCEA has used the law and science to defend Minnesota's environment since 1974. We support House File 973 because we believe that an MPCA Citizens Board provides important access for everyday Minnesotans to the process of making decisions about our shared environment. The MPCA Citizens Board was eliminated in 2015 without a single legislative hearing. For nearly 50 years, the Citizens Board has served the critical function of including the voices of everyday Minnesotans, scientists, and local residents in the decisions made by the MPCA. As you know, the MPCA sometimes makes controversial decisions on permitting and environmental review. By making the agency more accessible to the public, the Citizens Board ensures that decisions made by the MPCA are accountable to the communities and stakeholders involved. Thank you to Representative Purcell for offering this important legislation, and thank you, Chair Hansen and members, for your kind attention to my testimony today. We ask you to please support House File 973. Thank you.
Any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, Pollution Control Agency.
Thank you, Chair and Representatives. My name is Jean Coleman. I am a staff attorney with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I am here today to testify on House File 973. At this time, the MPCA is taking a neutral position on the bill. The MPCA supports citizen engagement and participation. Public comment and public meetings are a very common occurrence for us, whether around permits, reports, issues of concern like landfill cleanups or contamination sites. We hold about four sessions like this every month, or about 50 sessions per year. Citizen engagement, as you may have heard in other testimony from our commissioner, is a priority for our commissioner. It's one of her top concerns. And many mechanisms are already in place at the MPCA for formal citizen engagement. The Environmental Justice Advisory Group of the MPCA, we engage in tribal consultation, and the commissioner has been appointed EQB chair, which includes 8 citizen members. At the same time, the commissioner and the governor are concerned that reconstituting the citizen board would create a body that would take on authority and responsibility for the decisions the agency faces. For the above reasons, the agency is taking a neutral position on the bill. Thank you, Representative.
Representative Heintzman, then Backer, and then Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of comments and then a question, Representative Purcell. Our districts border each other, yours and mine, and I have a pretty good idea that they're similar in many ways, and one of the constant themes I hear from folks in district, and I'm sure you hear many of these same concerns relative to agencies, is the authority that these agencies wield and the impact that they can have, both positive and negative. You will hear those kinds of comments. I hear those kind of comments and work very hard to try to work with agencies, whether it's DNR, MPCA, and other agencies statewide. And I'm trying to understand, you know, kind of what's good for the goose, maybe it's good for the gander as well. If we have this legislation here to reinstate the Citizens Board, which I might have got this a little bit crosswise, but I think I got your quote right, that, you know, established in 1967, referring to the MPCA Citizens Board, and served us well. Well, boy, I heard a lot of different comments coming from businesses in Crow Wing County that were definitely having some strong feelings that aren't reflected in that comment. And you and I agree on many things. This is one that we definitely have a disagreement, and I'm trying to understand, if we're going to do this, reinstate the MPCA Citizens Board, why aren't we establishing one at DNR or other agencies if it's that great? I'm trying to understand the logic here. Representative, maybe you can help me out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, Representative Heintzman, I'm not bringing a bill on the DNR, and I don't know if anybody will establish a board, citizen board, or other agencies. But to the best of my recollection, this came out of a time, our citizens board, and if you go back in the history of the United States and the Cuyahoga River on fire, and I mean, we didn't have environmental quality regulations to speak of decades ago. And my understanding is that citizens were put smack dab in the middle of this process because we wanted citizens involved, and I believe that to be, that's my rationale. That's why I'm doing this. And if folks bring a bill on other agencies, citizen board bill, I'll sit and listen all ears. So, but this is specific to environmental quality, and it came out of that in my mind, and I was alive back then. I remember pretty well some of those times in the 60s and 70s. So that's where it comes from me.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quickly, some follow-up. So Representative Purcell, I guess I'm sympathetic. I wasn't alive during that time, but I think it's fair to say that agencies have changed since 1967. If I could see some demonstrated evidence, and your testifiers mentioned that there was permits that were allowed to proceed and move forward, and I'm not sure if they meant to imply that there was something inappropriate that was occurring at MPCA during that time, but I mean, if the MPCA broke the law, I'm assuming there would be a lot of folks lined up to talk about that and to show us in black and white what had transpired over the course of that process. And I didn't see that. Maybe it's there. Maybe they have that they could present to the committee, but it wasn't presented. So
I'd like to better understand where or what we could point to that is requiring that we reestablish this body that has incredible power, that they can usurp over an agency and they are unelected, appointed to a position. I'm sure folks that are very well-meaning, kind-hearted people, but do they have the expertise that our folks at MPCA have? Maybe they do, maybe they don't, but I'm not hearing that from my district, and I'm a little confused. I'm assuming that there's something maybe that we're missing, but I didn't hear that evidence provided to the committee today.
Representative Purcell.
Mr. Chair, I didn't hear the evidence you're talking about either, per se, but let me just state it the outright that I believe the Citizens Board was just common folk like us. What are we doing here? We got elected to these positions, and those folks come from, many of them from our districts, and sit on that Citizens Board, and they just bring a good citizen perspective. And by and large, they haven't been, it hasn't been controversial. But there happened to be, as I recall, happened to be a controversial decision that they made to require more information be gathered, and it had to do with a dairy feedlot, a big one. And that was their decision. They wanted more information before, you know, a final decision was made. And I don't begrudge them that. I didn't, from what I read about it, I didn't see enough information about groundwater, et cetera, to make a decision, okay, let's go ahead with thousands of more dairy cattle in that particular area. So I think it just comes back to common sense, and if I'm going to err on the side of common sense, I'll be judged by that, and I take it.
Representative Backer, I think there might be another test. Were your questions for the PCA, or could we get another?
I have two questions for the PCA.
Okay, if the PCA testifier could get back up. Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. There was one testifier that talked that MPCA don't do their work as thoroughly as they should, or implied that MPCA doesn't work with the neighbors in a particular area and so forth, and would like to hear your comment on that, please.
Mr. Chair and representatives, I do not have knowledge of the specific situation that was testified about. I can say generally that the MPCA, and particularly this commissioner and this administration, is very open to meeting with citizens and with anyone who requests the meeting. I have seen people in and out of the commissioner's office since Commissioner Bishop took office on every kind of issue.
Okay. President Backer.
Thank you. And also, one of the testifiers commented that MPCA doesn't really support, and I might be taking this out of context, I'm trying not to, but I wrote down does not support good environmental practices, and I've never heard that in regards with MPCA. How would you comment on that, please?
Mr. Chair and representatives, I thank you for Representative Backer's statement that you've never heard that about PCA. I appreciate that. And I would say that that providing good environmental support is our mission. It is the requirement of all the statutes and regulations that we operate under, and my belief is that that is what our job is, and that is what the job we do is.
Okay. Good. And that's all I have for the MPCA. I do have another item, but let's do the testifier first, or do you want me to go?
What did Representative Lewick, was your question for the PCA, or was it?
PCA.
Okay. Why?
And then we'll do the testifier.
Yep, that's fair.
So, Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we go to page 4 of the bill, line 4.18 and 4.19, the commissioner shall make all decisions on behalf of the agency that are not required to be made by the agency under 116.02. And if we go all the way back over to the front, we say basically the agency consists of the commissioner and eight people appointed by the governor. So what I'm curious about is then what decisions is a commissioner allowed to make based on sentence there, 4.18 and 4.18. Can you outline what commissioners or what decisions a commissioner can actually make as the head of MPCA?
So, Mr. Chair and representatives, my understanding of the bill, and I would appreciate the author's clarification if my understanding is incorrect, is that the connection between lines 4.18 and 4.19 and the general statement about the agency as reconstituted their power in 1.5 through 1.19 are that any residual decisions that are not articulated in this bill would be left with the agency. And this bill talks about many of the powers of the agencies, including environmental review documents, permits, and variances from those permits, which are a lot of what we do, but not all of what we do.
Representative Lewis.
Well, that's exactly my question. The not all that's included here, what is that? Because it looks to me like other than maybe permission to empty the trash can, there ain't whole much that the commissioner can do. But again, you know, the question is what really is left for the decisions that the commissioner can make?
Proceed.
Mr. Chair and representatives, a few that come off the top of my head are, for example, under the Clean Water Act, the agency puts forward impaired waters lists. And I don't see that that is covered specifically under this bill. However, there are provisions whereby any decision of the agency could be come under review by the board by a petition that is approved by the commissioner. That's one example. I could probably come up with a list, and we could come up with more if requested.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just would offer Representative Lewis that the commissioner makes a lot of decisions, and the citizen board has only become involved in a handful over the years that and giving feedback to the commissioner. And it was only when one of those decisions became controversial that the issue of the citizen board became controversial itself. So I the commissioner has acted over 50 years, and we progressed fairly well as a state with the citizens board. That's my belief.
Representative Lewis.
Well, thank you for that. But I'm reading the plain language here. The agency consists of the commissioner and eight members. Then, so it looks to me like there's nine people that consist of that agency. Looking at 1.16 through 1.19, and then there's a comment in there about one must be from the field of agriculture. So, you know, if you look at that one, it looks like, because it's an and, not, you know, the commissioner can't make any decisions. It's a nine-person deal. Now, whether or not the commissioner or the other eight people elect to get directly involved in a decision, obviously that's probably nine different decisions there. But go back up. I realize this is in the purpose, but if you go up to the purpose paragraph there's a comment that giving voice to rural residents upset about decisions that made by the agency staff in St. Paul, occasionally overturning those staff decisions, I guess, and this is for council. Well, is the commissioner part of the agency staff?
Mr. Chair and Representative, the commissioner is the head of the agency. The commissioner makes decisions. I don't know that we would typically refer to the commissioner as staff of the agency, and I suspect the line is referring to decisions made by those other than the commissioner, but I'm not certain about that. Thank you.
Representative
Lehrer. A follow-up on that, if I could, Mr. Chair. Well, so then who does the staff actually, who are they employed by, and who do they work for? Who do they answer for work product, for decisions that they, I'm assuming they make recommendations, and there's a certain level of lower level decisions that are delegated, but where does that delegation authority come from when somebody's able to make a decision at a regional office?
Mr. Chair and representatives, there are formal delegation documents from the commissioner to assistant commissioners, deputy commissioners, managers, supervisors, and that's about the level at which official decisions can be delegated and are delegated.
I'd say now, and I know that Representative Backer's got some additional questions, but I guess, and this is more of a general comment, there was some concern raised about disagreement, I'll put it this way, disagreement with what the agency did relative to permitting agriculture operations, and if they were as grievous as they were portrayed, it would seem like that the this commission would have stepped in and overruled everybody, and it wouldn't have never happened. So I guess, and again, it's a rhetorical question. So what did the commission do in those cases? That it would appear that they didn't at least fulfill a expectation that they would ride herd on the staff and frankly on the commissioner, whoever is in that position. It would appear that some of the justification here doesn't quite hit the mark, because that didn't happen the last 2 years. That was a fair amount of a while ago, and so but again, it just strikes me that what we're going to end up with here, Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell, we're going to end up with 8 people that are appointed by the governor, and over an 8-year period, you're going to end up with folks that you know, in general, are going to think like the governor, they're going to act like the governor, and considering that the commissioner's appointed by the governor, you're going to have a group think there, for better or for worse, and I don't see where that's going to add anything to it. In fact, if you get a group think that goes in the wrong direction, you know, good Lord help us in rural Minnesota or in industry. So I just don't see the, if this is such a great deal, then I agree with Representative Heisman. We ought to be doing this in every agency out there, that there should be no commissioner able to operate without a literally an overruling body. And I think that we've got better quality commissioners, including in this administration, that can be fair to the people and abide by the public processes, excruciatingly detailed public processes we go through here now for environmental review. So anyway, I used up more time than I need, I'll bet you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, so members, we have 5 people on the list. I know that there are public testifiers. I'm going to ask the public testifiers to speak. I know that Representative Davids is back there waiting patiently as well, but I'd like the testifiers to speak, and then we can continue with the questions. So, and if there are other testifiers, then they should line up, and so I get a good count of how many we've got.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify today. My name is James Connie. I'm a dairy farmer. I live in Renville County, and I'm a member of the Land Stewardship Project. Our state agencies and departments belong to the Minnesotans, the people, and they should not belong to special interests. And that said, I believe the Citizens Board was a very important part of allowing the people the chance to have a voice in our government. And I think that what they did was provide a check and balance to the system that allowed for some steam to be let off, as it were, at times. It allowed people to testify and give their point of view. And even when they didn't get their way, I was at the last Citizens Board event that they had, and I was very impressed by what happened there. Okay, now that said, I think our state agencies and departments many times are caught between a rock and a hard place. In other words, they're trying to do the best job they can, and at the other times, they're said, okay, they are pushed to put out these environmental permits in a timely basis. And they are mandated to say, get it out in 60 days. Well, what happens then is that it gets run through the agency very quickly. And that then ends up being a possibility for a problem going down the line. So it's not necessarily the agency's fault that things fall through the cracks, and that we end up needing another step, a citizens board, to be able to step in and say, let's step back and take another look at this particular spot. And the citizens board did not review everything the agency did in the very, at all. They just reviewed a few things as they would come up. I believe that those in our communities, our citizens, are the best judges of what happens in their own communities. They don't have to be experts. They have to just breathe the air and drink the water and live there. And they know that sometimes things are not right. And they want to say, okay, I want to hear more information on this. And this is where the Citizens Board is very important, in that they can get the more information that they want. I believe that reinstating the Citizens Board would be the right thing to do. And as Representative Purcell would say, let's put on our big boy pants and get this done.
Mr. Morris.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Steve Morris. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, statewide coalition of 70 environmental conservation organizations. Appreciate Senator Representative Purcell for you bringing this language forward. As you know, this series of hearings is the first time this issue has been debated in the Minnesota House for this repeal that we're now trying to reestablish. I'd like to call your attention to three letters. One is being distributed from our coalition with 20 different groups supporting this legislation, and then two letters that you should have had in your packet from former TCA Board Commission members or TCA Citizen Board members. I would just like to make a couple of points. I know this has gone on long, but we believe strongly that this is an important role for citizens. I want to back up and just say this was not originally part of our collaborative priorities for the year as a coalition coming into this, but when Representative Purcell came up with the issue, a number of our members raised their concerns about making sure this issue moves forward, and so only this week has our coalition voted to be in support of this legislation as a broad, important issue for the entire environmental community. We believe it strengthens citizens' roles in decision-making, putting citizens front and center, and just a couple of points why that is so important. Number one, public engagement is very different than citizen decision-making. As you've discussed, the citizens were the agency, and it was set up that way back in 1967 because it's citizen action and citizen reaction that actually brought environmental issues to the fore. And so the thinking was that citizens would maintain a central role and be, as you heard, have an active engagement in major decision-making going forward and moving the environmental protection forward. In addition, as you also heard, it provides a really good public forum for some of these difficult decisions. Sometimes you can kind of let a little air out of the balloon when you have a public hearing process before the decision makers on what the public thinks and let the public express their opinions. In my experience of working with the Citizens Board, we were more disappointed with the actions of the board than supportive. But nonetheless, we think it's a really good role to have citizens in that capacity. And there was a lot of discussion back in 2015 when this was repealed, and we're hearing it again today. Well, you know, maybe things have changed since 1967. You know, we don't have the Cayuga River burning anymore. But let me suggest our environmental issues and the challenges that we face as a society to our great doors and great outdoors have grown more existential, they've grown bigger, they've grown more urgent, and they've become much more complicated. And let me also suggest that we never actually make significant progress on addressing these existential issues, these major issues, unless we have active citizen engagement and citizens involved making the decision, helping to steer the ship on this. So we believe strongly that this makes sense. We ask you to support House File 973, and please put citizens back in their central role of protecting our environment and natural resources.
Thank you. Are there any other testifiers in the audience? So I have Representative Backer, then Heinzman, then Fisher, then Becker-Finn, then Lee.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and to the author. I was involved with this pretty whole lot because this happened in my district that you're referring to. And one of the challenges, I saw both sides of the issues, concerns from an environmental perspective, and then, of course, concerns about all the partners. There's a lot of partners in that dairy. And this became much more than just information gathering. The Citizen Board asked to do a full EIS. That is a whole lot more than an informational gathering. That's a million-dollar price tag. And that's where a lot of people felt that they stepped their bounds. Informational gathering is one thing, but when you start to do an EIS from a company that is recognized in Minnesota as probably one of the best stewards when it comes to these operations, I've been on their facility. You don't smell manure. You don't have the flies. They run a very good operation, these partners. So it was a lot more than informational gathering, and I think that's where a lot of businesses got really concerned. When you can have citizens overlook an agency and just step in like that, that's where the concerns became. Because like several representatives have said here, we don't do this for any other agency that we have citizens say, hey, the agencies don't know what they're doing. I hear a lot of things about the MPCA in my district, but I've never heard that they are not fair and thorough, and generally they side not necessarily on the business side, but they are seen fair and so forth. So I just wanted clarification. It was a lot more than information gathering. That citizen board wanted to do EIS, and that's a lot of dollars. So that's all I have, and I'll thank you for hearing that comment.
Representative Heinzman. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Purcell, for bringing this forward. I think it's really important that we bring transparency back in. I feel that too often over the years, as we've lost the former citizens group, that the agency seems to become more and more business-oriented. And while I hear my friends on the other side saying that they've been too hard on business, I take a look that the MPCA's primary role is to protect us and decide how much pollution it's going to allow into the environment. And in many instances, that the pollution that comes into the environment, when it's released and it doesn't do it right, can impact people and our local citizens very immediately and in long-term effects. We have seen that happen repeatedly over time. I know that some of the cases that have been referenced in the past is when you're doing a large feedlot in a karst region, if something goes wrong, that manure is in somebody's well within a few hours. It's prudent that we take the extra time to take a look into it. I think it's important that we bring the citizens back in to start restoring some of the citizens' balance, because if the agency is going to be deciding how much pollution is going to be impacting the citizens of our state, it is vital that our citizens have the transparency and the input in that process to protect themselves and to make sure that the MPCA is protecting them in the future, because at times I feel they have seriously failed on that charge in the past.
Representative Purcell renews his motion that House File 973 be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Ayes have it. Ayes have it. Representative Davids.
I will move that House File 953 be laid over. Or Representative Heintzman, would you like to move Representative David's bill?
I would like to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move House File 953 for, I believe you said, possible inclusion?
Yes. Representative Davids.
He didn't say impossible inclusion, did he?
No, I said possible.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. You've had a long committee meeting. House File 953 is very straightforward. I'll briefly describe it. I do have folks who can testify if needed, but it's pretty straightforward. Provides $300,000 in fiscal year 2020 to the Commission of the PCA for a grant to the Minnesota Association of County Feedlot Officers to develop in coordination with the PCA, the U of M Extension, to provide online training curriculum related to animal feedlots. That's the bill we've heard in past years. Excuse me, hopefully this year we can get it across the finish line.
Representative David, since they made the trip, I'd like them to just introduce themselves so they're in the permanent record then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And they will validate their mileage.
Yes. Mr. Vermilia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Because of the timeline, I will try to give you a Reader's Digest version. I am the feedlot officer for Steele County, also here representing the Minnesota Association of County Feedlot Officers on MACFO. The bill that you see in front of you is really a collaboration of efforts from agency staff, county feedlot officers, and the University of Minnesota. It's a program that we've been working on for about 3 or 4 years. What brought us in front of you today is that we have unfortunately seen a significant turnover in county staff folks. During a 3-year time period, we actually saw a 50% turnover in folks regulating feedlots in county programs. What we started to hear is we got some feedback from the livestock industry. And what we were hearing from them is that we were having folks being regulated that by people that really didn't have a very good basic understanding of the rules and requirements. The other thing that we were hearing back is that there was inconsistencies on how those rules were being implemented across the state. So as we move forward, we looked at ways to how better streamline it to maintain a long-term sustainable training program. When people were leaving, we started to kind of do preliminary exit interviews for them. And I know this is hard to believe, but a lot of people that come into the program are younger than I am. And so what we were seeing is we said, what if we developed an online program that's a medium that they're very, very comfortable in? We think it's a great program that we could go ahead and do. And so we're really asking your support to do that. We've spent about two and a half years developing a draft. In our opinion, we have a shovel-ready project. We need financial support to finish the project. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other testifiers?
Proceed. Mr. Chair and representatives, my name is Tim Arlt. I'm the RA, program leader with the Center for Agriculture, Food, and Natural Resources with the University of Minnesota Extension Service. And I've been working with Mr. Vermilia and others at MPCA on this project for the last couple of years and kind of been doing it on a shoestring budget of nothing in trying to move forward on this project. We're at the point where in order to move forward, we really need to hire some people that are educational designers and some support staff to go with that to do some video work and et cetera. And we can't, you know, we don't have the money in our budget to do it, and they don't really have the money in their budget to do it either. We've been trying to work with them over the last 4 years or so on projects, educational programs, and we have been doing those. We will continue to do those. But we really need to get people to a base level, and that's what this project is about. So I appreciate it. We're here to support the project, and we appreciate your support in the past, and hopefully it will go forward. Thank you.
Is there anyone in the audience would like to speak? Any questions? Representative Lewitt.
Just a real quick comment. This is a good bill. One of the things we need everybody to understand, those folks, those county feedlot officers, they've got delegated responsibility from MPCA. So keep these folks out there doing what they're doing. You're saving money at the St. Paul level.
Representative Davids, any closing remarks?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm not aware of any opposition to this bill, and hopefully it can be rolled into your bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Representative Heinzman renews his motion that House File 953 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.